Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Monday, October 8th.
First rule of cheating is don't get cold. Oh, don't get cold, yeah.
We know Mitt Romney lied in the first presidential debate in Denver last week, and now we know he cheated, too. Some very resourceful individuals have used a freeze frame from the video to produce individual shots that showed Mr. Romney pulling an item out of his pocket and placing it on the podium. And later, an over-the-shoulder shot showed that he had some notes that were open there. It appeared to be a kind of a daytimer or a planner book, a little bit larger than pocket size. And there is also a shot of him trying to dispose of that evidence at the end of the debate, handing it off to one of his sons. The rules of the debate, very clear. The candidates could not bring any notes with them. Paper and pen were provided for them to take notes on their opponent's comments during the debate. And so just like Bush with that bulge in his back in the 2004 debate with John Kerry, the Republicans seem to lack confidence. And, of course, Romney overcompensated. He was so ebullient and, demonstrating huge confidence as he attacked the president and lied repeatedly. And why is it that Romney, who clearly was very well rehearsed for the debate, was so insecure that he required a cheat sheet to remind him of his scripted comments? And, of course, because he changes his positions to the point of ludicrousness and dishonesty so often, I guess he needed some notes to keep his own mind straight. And I want to take my hat off to Paul Krugman, who on the George Stephanopoulos TV show on Sunday. And by the way, I don't generally watch those Sunday talk shows. I've got better things to do on Sunday, and I don't think that they really generate very much that's terribly interesting or new. But Paul Krugman, the Nobel Economics Prize winner, columnist for the New York Times, professor of economics at Princeton, he was the lone voice. I mean, even James Carville was there just saying, Obama had a bad night. And his wife, Mary Madeline, paired up with him, and they're always so bizarre together, was just repeating Romney talking points that the president had nothing to say because he has nothing to say. And Obama has acknowledged in recent days that he blew it in the debate last week. But Paul Krugman said, Romney told flat-out lies. He changed his positions and acted like they've never been changed. And bloggers have demonstrated some 38 inaccurate statements or flat-out lies that Romney told during that debate. And Krugman correctly called out the media as too timid to call a lie an L-I-E. The fact-checkers showed that Romney repeatedly misstated things, but they can't quite bring themselves to call it a lie. And as I pointed out in the morning after comments from the debate, Obama made some erroneous statements, too. Was he lying? I leave it to you to decide. One of his misstatements was when he said that health care insurance premiums have come down. That's not true. They continue to rise faster than the rate of inflation. And some of the increases in the past year have been shocking. What has come down is the overall rate of increase in the cost of the health care services covered by insurance policies. Was that an intentional fib by the president? I don't know. But Romney was so aggressive in bulldozing Jim Lehrer, and of course Lehrer is so lame, he said, I just wanted to get him to talk. It's not my job to straighten out the truth. And unfortunately, what happens is these lies then become part of the fabric of reporting and are treated as maybe questionable, but never really dismantled and broken down for people to see. Meanwhile, before Mitt Romney even delivered his speech at the Virginia Military Institute today, The New York Times ripped him from the editorial page. They clearly got an advance copy of the speech. And I'll read you a couple of lines. Romney seems to consider himself ludicrously a leader similar to the likes of Harry Truman and George Marshall. And at one point, he obliquely questioned Mr. Obama's patriotism. The hope seems to be the big propaganda, said loudly and often enough, will drown out Obama's respectable record in world affairs, make Americans believe Romney would be the better leader, and cover up the fact that there is mostly just hot air behind his pronouncements. I don't agree with the Times that Obama's record on world affairs is respectable, and if you listen on any spotty or regular basis here, you know how I feel. But their willingness to call out Romney on this is notable. They go on. He says that in the policies announced today, they're either pretty much like Obama's, or where there are hints of differences, they would pull the United States in a wrong and even dangerous direction. Romney desperately wants to undercut the edge that voters have given Obama on foreign policy, even before he ordered the killing of Osama bin Laden. But he offers no real evidence to back up that particular claim, and if it were true, the threats have been so much worse for so long, well, it's odd that Mr. Romney hadn't really talked about them before. And the Times says that the idea that militancy in the Arab world, it's a serious issue that needs to be addressed by both candidates. I certainly agree there. But as much as Mr. Romney wishes voters would believe otherwise, it was George W. Bush's unnecessary war in Iraq that gave Iran more room to maneuver and fueled anti-Americanism. Now, the editorial goes on and makes some other good points. But let me jump out there to reference an article that was in Sunday's New York Times that goes beyond the statement that I just read you from the anti-Romney editorial. And it is a profile of Abu Yahya al-Libi and his brother, whose name is Abdel Wahab Mohammed Qaid, Q-A-I-D. They are both Libyans, and they are Libyan revolutionaries. The older brother, who is still alive, named Qaid, again Q-A-I-D, he and his little brother were militants who fought for a long time to throw out Muammar Gaddafi as the leader of their country, Libya. But after the September 11 terrorist attacks, and the United States-led invasion of Afghanistan that occurred 11 years ago this week, Abu Yahya was rounded up, captured in Pakistan, and imprisoned without trial at Bagram. When he finally escaped in 2005 after picking a prison lock, Abu Yahya was reborn as the leading theologian, propagandist, and battlefield commander, and he joined Al-Qaeda. The claim is that he rose to be their number two until he was killed by a drone strike earlier this year. And what we learn is that many other Libyan Islamist militants who had gone to Pakistan to avoid being imprisoned by Gaddafi were rolled up in the U.S. dragnet. And of course, we were offering bounty payments to warlords to deliver these people when we arrived in Afghanistan. And Human Rights Watch estimates that more than 15 cases of Libyan Islamists who were captured by the United States and then subjected to what's called coercive interrogation, politely in the Times, torture, and explicitly waterboarding, that they were radicalized by their mistreatment by the United States. And when they got out or were released, they joined efforts to fight us. And I point this out because the kind of aggressive foreign policy that Mitt Romney advocates, it's even worse than Obama's, would simply alienate more people. He indicates he has no sense of the difference between a Libyan Islamist and a Pakistani Islamist and a member of the Taliban. And Romney wants to reinstate torture. He wants to go back to the Rumsfeld Army Field Manual with all of those enhanced interrogation techniques. And Abu Yahya al-Libi is a poster child for the brutal, dangerous unintended consequences of America's foreign policy. And Mitt Romney is so tone-deaf to these issues. And, to be fair, Obama is simply a little bit better on these issues. And his surrogates hit back aggressively after Romney's speech, unlike the times they actually waited for him to deliver it. And, Madeleine Albright says, full of platitude, free of substance. Two experts on Libya, Michelle Flournoy and Colin Kahl, foreign policy advisors to the president, said Romney's position on Libya has no credibilities since he's been both for and against our Libya policy. The president dedicated a memorial to Cesar Chavez in the California high desert today and made no comment about Romney's remarks, but is expected to as he comes to hit up the ATM in San Francisco at some high-dollar fundraisers as he continues to fund his campaign. By the way, David Axelrod, will you stop sending me these damn emails? I actually responded to one yesterday, which was allegedly from the president, and he asked if I'm in. And I said, no, I'm not, Mr. President, and I listed, as you've heard, my litany of reasons why I won't be supporting Barack Obama this November. I have the luxury in California of casting a protest vote, and I shall. But they just raised $181 frickin' million dollars in September. And they're still crying wolf and crying poor and asking me for money. Israel pounded the Gaza Strip over the last 24 hours, and Gaza militants fired a barrage of rockets and mortar shells into Israeli territory today on Monday. This latest flare-up began with a missile strike Sunday against two men who Israel said were members of jihadist groups involved in terrorist activity against Israel. Some Palestinian news outlets identified them as radical Salafi militants. And two men who were riding on a motorcycle were critically wounded, one later died. So Israel sparked this by a unilateral attack from the air on a motorcycle that injured at least 8 bystanders. And so we don't know exactly who is responsible, but the armed wings of Hamas and Islamic Jihad have issued statements saying that they started the rocket and mortar fire aiming at Israeli military bases near the border. The other interesting dust-up in the Israel-Palestine area over the weekend involves an unmanned aerial drone. And just last week here, we reported to you that Iran announced it has a drone, and they also, to tweak the United States, sent a pink scale model of a drone of ours that crash-landed in Iran earlier this year. And in my discussion with Colonel Ann Wright, in the podcast we released a few days ago that's still available at peterbcollins.com, Ann Wright had just returned from Pakistan, where together with members of Code Pink and other Americans, they marched from Islamabad toward the tribal areas of North and South Waziristan with Imran Khan, who is a political leader of the opposition in Pakistan. And their message is protesting America's use of drones and apologizing to the Pakistanis for the effort. And one of the things that Colonel Wright and I talked about is that currently we enjoy technological superiority from the air because of our advanced development of drones, but other nations are catching up, and this is an example. Now, we don't know for sure, but Israel claims that they know that this drone was sent by Hezbollah. It approached Israel's southern Mediterranean coast, flew deep into Israeli airspace before warplanes shot it down about 20 minutes later. Israeli news reports said the drone was not carrying explosives and appeared to be on a reconnaissance mission. Israeli lawmaker Miri Regev says it is an Iranian drone that was launched by Hezbollah. That was tweeted. No evidence offered to confirm that allegation. Hamas is not known to possess drones, so it's a process of elimination, they claim. And there's no inkling that it's an American drone, but who knows? And because we're in this whole new gray area of unmanned aerial warfare conducted by joystick from an air-conditioned room in the United States, we think that we can just drone and strike anybody. And within a few years, we're going to find ourselves begging for an international treaty to regulate the use of unmanned aerial drones, and I suspect cyber warfare as well. Blowback is what it's called. For the fifth day in a row, Turkey fired artillery into Syria in response to Syrian shells that have landed on the Turkish side of the border. And this is a very dangerous uptick in the violence. In a related story, the New York Times reported on Sunday that delivering arms to the Syrian rebels has been slowed down by the United States, and that we have been encouraging our Arab allies, primarily Saudi Arabia and Qatar, not to send them very serious advanced weapons. Sure, some AK-47s, but if you give them anti-aircraft guns, they'll still have them when the revolution is over. And whatever government surfaces or international group tries to occupy Syria will have to confront the weapons that we and our allies sent in. It's a very dicey situation. And any illusion that the United States or its Arab allies can control the situation in Syria is an illusion, not just an illusion. Last week, we reported that there was finally mainstream media confirmation of what our friend Gareth Porter had reported from the conference held in Istanbul in July with Iran and five other nations related to Iran's nuclear enrichment program. And what Gareth had said and what the Times confirmed is now disputed by Iran's nuclear negotiator, Saeed Jalili. He told state news media that Iran had never made such an offer. Quote, Iran has never delivered any new proposal other than what had been put forward in talks with the P5 plus one. The New York Times and other U.S. media reports are baseless. Well, I don't know what to make of that, but we all deserve to know about it. In Venezuela, Hugo Chavez has won another six-year term by about a 10% margin over a spirited challenger named Enrique Capriles. And I have such mixed feelings, because on the one hand, I think Chavez is an inspiring populist socialist who has tried to take on the oil industry in his country and balance the interests of the wealthy with those of the poor. But he's a megalomaniac. He changed the rules on term limits so that he can rule virtually for life. And most people don't realize this, but Venezuela owns a piece of an electronic voting machine company called ES&S. Or they did. I don't know the current status. And I also don't know how many people in Venezuela voted on touchscreen machines, those unverifiable electronic voting systems. But I think the outcome is pretty secure, and Chavez gets another 6 years. Here in California, our maximum leader, Governor Jerry Brown, has ordered state smog regulators to allow winter blend gasoline to be sold earlier than usual, 3 weeks early. And this is because we have been subjected to another round of gas pump extortion. I filled up last week, and I used the mid-grade for my car, and I think I paid about $4.40 a gallon. The average across the state for regular unleaded is $4.66. And there are many filling stations with a $5 plus per gallon price. And the oil industry says, oh, you know, we had a refinery fire at Richmond at the Chevron, and another refinery shut down in Southern California. But it really does seem to be extortion, and even Senator Feinstein, who is a big friend of business, has fired off a second letter demanding an investigation because she says these price hikes are not related to supply and demand. And she's on cruise control heading to her reelection to a fourth term in office this November. Here in San Francisco, we are bracing for Tuesday's meeting of the Board of Supervisors. The question is, are there three votes opposing the effort by Mayor Ed Lee, affirmed by a single count returned to the returned by the Ethics Commission, calling for the removal from office of Ross Mercurimi, who was elected sheriff last November at the same time Ed Lee was elected to a four-year term after saying he would not run for that term. And the ethically challenged mayor used a process at the Ethics Commission that is a kangaroo court of the lowest order. And he referred six very vague charges to the Ethics Commission. They approved one, which is kind of a merger of more than one of the counts presented by the mayor, but rejected all the others. And I recently read the transcript of that Ethics Commission hearing, the final one where they voted to send a single charge of official misconduct against the sheriff to the Board of Supervisors for their consideration. And even as they were voting on that single count, which they passed with one dissent, they were terribly confused about the whole process. They didn't know what they were supposed to do. They made it up as they went along. And the sheriff has acknowledged, through a guilty plea to a misdemeanor, that he broke the law in a fight with his wife last New Year's Eve before he had been sworn in as sheriff. And just on the fundamental definition of official misconduct, don't you have to be an official, you know, actually sworn in before you could possibly commit official misconduct? And how can a private issue, like a fight with your wife, be construed as official misconduct? I've met with the sheriff and with his wife. She never wanted these charges to be brought. And while there is a videotape that conflicts with her current statements to some degree, I believe that this is a political lynching, because Mercurimi is a progressive and Mayor Ed Lee is not. It really boils down to something that simple. And it's very unclear. Mercurimi served 8 years on that Board of Supervisors. Not all those people like him. But will they honor their duty to read the record and to make sure that this process is not selectively used to bounce Ross Mercurimi, when we've had many cases of ethical challenges, like the mayor before Ed Lee, Gavin Newsom, who had an affair with the wife of one of his top staff people, and the mayor before him, Willie Brown, who had a child with his fundraiser. They were not married, still aren't. And neither of those issues was brought before the Ethics Commission. And those occurred while those officials were in office and could be construed as real official misconduct if somebody wanted to make the case. We'll see how it turns out, and I will report to you if it's available at Showtime tomorrow, if not on Wednesday, here at the Peter B. Collins News and Comment. This podcast is available free to all, so do me a favor. Put it up on Facebook and say that you like it. Share it with your friends. Thank you.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.